history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there waiting to be told. Eye-opening stories, remarkable stories, inspiring stories. But the only way we get to hear them is if we ask a few questions and then take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, and often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Here in America and around the globe, we're all treading on uncertain ground in light of this coronavirus pandemic. It's interrupting life here in the U.S. to a degree that hasn't taken place since World War II. And along with that, of course, has come this new idea of social distancing that we're all trying to get used to. Since the men and women we hear from each week on Hometown Heroes are part of the highest risk age group, I'm not going to be visiting any nonagenarians until it's safe to do so. And it also means that the weekly Stories of Service class in Clovis, California won't be meeting for a while. The interview you're going to hear today was recorded in that class earlier this month. Since 2002, veterans have met every Monday morning at 9:30 at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District, and with the patient encouragement of Janice Stevens, they've shared their military memories, which have even turned into multiple books. That class will resume meeting when it's safe to do so, so if you live in or around Clovis, California, I know they'd love to see you there. Often when I meet up with a veteran, there's nobody else in the room, and if there is, it's usually a spouse or a child or a close friend of the veteran. For today's conversation with 96-year-old Al Bloomer, he was surrounded by dozens of his fellow veterans spanning from World War II into more recent decades. And if you happen to hear an occasional echo effect, it's because our conversation was being piped through the speaker system so they could all get to know their friend Al a little better. I started out by asking him how long he'd been participating in that class.
Oh, many, many Mondays. I don't remember exactly when, but a lot of years. I sure enjoy it.
And I'm going to be taking you a lot further back because we're going to hear about World War II from beginning to end. You were in the Navy before Pearl Harbor happened, and through the finish line, the USS Enterprise, the most active ship in World War II in more major engagements than any other ship, the legendary Big E is the ship that Al served on. But I want to take you further back. Before you got on the Big E, tell me about your childhood. Where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Pennsylvania. And my dad, when I was about 4 years old, he decided he wanted to go to Alaska. Well, we got on a train, and as far as we got is California. I guess we ran out of money, and we settled in Dinuba, California. And that's where we was raised. I went to school there in Dinuba, from grammar school and so forth up into high school.
I wonder if you're the only family that's ever ended up in Dinuba trying to go from Pennsylvania to Alaska. I don't think that was the plan.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what happened. I have three sisters and two brothers. We were all together for a long time. I went 2 years there to Dinuba High School. You had 2 years, and you were 17 years old, and at that time, you could join the Navy. Well, this one guy and I used to hang around together. We used to get jobs, and then we used to deliver handbills for the theater there in a little small town there, and he gave me a free ticket to the movie. Can you imagine? Instead of money? But anyway, he wanted to get in the Navy so bad, and I said, okay. I think at that time, I had finally got my driver's license early, but I don't remember how we got to Visalia. But anyway, that's where the recruiting office. They don't have them on every corner like they do now. And so we got down there, and we took a test, and both of us passed. And then the recruiting guy, well, being 17, he had to come out to the house there and have my folks sign for me to go in. So they did. A couple of weeks later, the recruiter come by and says, okay, you guys, get your gear together. We're going to ship you to San Francisco for a physical examination. Why you ever ship you up there when you're going to go down to San Diego? I never know. But anyway, we get up there, and boy, he was really gung-ho, man. We're going in the Navy. Yeah, right, wrong. We get the physical, and lo and behold, they passed me, but they didn't pass him because he was colorblind. Can you imagine at that time? Anyway, I stayed in, and here I go on down there. They had a group of us. We got on the train, and we rode it down to San Diego. So that's where I went, trained there for about 6 weeks.
And this is July of 41?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So you kind of got suckered into the Navy.
Yeah. Yeah, you might say that, yeah.
How did your folks feel about it? They had a sign for you.
Well, they thought I wasn't going to make it. But I did. Well, my dad was in the Navy, too. He was in the World War One, and he was a coxswain on a hospital ship. Now, he never did get much information on him like you have nowadays. So that's one reason I stayed in there.
Did you have any inkling that a war might be imminent?
At the time when I first went in, I didn't, no. After boot camp, you know, a lot of this, they had rifle manual of arms and so forth and semaphore. Well, I knew all that stuff because when I was in Danube, we had a ROTC program there, and they had to learn all that, which I joined, and I knew the manual of arms and how to march and everything. And then in scouting, we had semaphore. We didn't have all these fancy radios that they have nowadays. And in the Navy, I knew all the semaphore and everything, so I got by real easy, and tying knots and so forth. I knew all that stuff. That really prepared me for all the activities in boot camp.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do in the Navy, what your specialty would be, or what kind of ship
you
wanted to be on?
Well, no, I didn't know about the different ships at that time. But I wanted to be a mechanic for airplanes. That's what I wanted to do. So they gave us a bunch of tests. I guess my score wasn't quite high enough to go to school. So they signed me at that time. Afterwards, the boot camp, they signed me to the Enterprise. Well, the Enterprise was over in Pearl Harbor, so they said, okay, we're going to send about 10 of you guys are going to go down to San Pedro and get on this tanker. This tanker was the Neosho. So he says, oh boy, it's going to take 3 days to get over there. Well, you know, the Navy, and 3 days, they ain't going to let you lay around. So what they do, they put a paintbrush in your hand and you start painting every day. And then when we got over there, they decided, well, the Enterprise outside, so they rounded us up, about 10 of us guys, and they put us on a motor launch, and lo and behold, they took us over, and it was put before the Enterprise came in, put us over and put us on one of these old battleships. They were all in port at that time. Of course, your sea bag was everything that you owned, including your mattress and everything. And that thing was so heavy, I think it weighed more than I did. They didn't have bunks like they did on the carrier. They slept in hammocks on this old battleship. And they lived out of your sea bag. And they had like a trough on it. And he says, okay, you guys, you put your sea bag here, and I'll show you where you hang your hammock. And he says, okay, Al, your hammock's going to be right here, and so forth. And he says, you take it down every day. And just about that time, some guy comes back and says, oh, no, you guys don't belong here. You got to go over to the Saratoga. So they put us on a motor launch. We go over to the Saratoga. We have to wait on the Saratoga until the Enterprise come in. Well, the Enterprise wasn't going to come in for a couple of days. So they put us on there, and here we got in a bunk they had, and they put us to work again. And guess what we had to do? Well, at that time, the uniform of the day was T-shirts, white shorts, and socks and black shoes. Well, we didn't have any, but they finally found some initiatives to it. So they said, that's what you wear during the day and until you get transferred. Well, here again, what do you think they had us do? Paint. You know what we painted? The flight deck. Can you imagine with a mop? Oh, I tell you, never before. All right. And then finally the Enterprise comes in. And then they get us all together again, and then we get transferred to the Enterprise, and then they line us up on the hangar deck. You come up on the hangar deck, and they says, okay, I want you, and you're going to this division. They didn't ask you what you wanted to do or anything. You and you going here. And, oh, well, you know, he didn't luck out. He gets the ship's company in the deck division. Then their duty was to take care of the forecastle and officer company and so forth. Well, that was okay. But, you know, when I went aboard there, you know, I never knew there were so many different bugle calls. Every 5 minutes, the old bugle will go and the old bosun will say, now, hear this, so and so and so. And anyway, part of the seaman's job was, too, that they had to have the motor launch. Well, he gets assigned to a motor launch, but I don't remember a motor launch bugle call or like that. And they said, away, so many motor launch or boat and so forth. I never did hear mine. And I was kind of waiting around. And also, now hear this, Seaman Bloomer report to the quarterdeck. I'm in problem. I come to find out they had it, but I didn't know it. Part of the other part of the crew kind of filled in on for me, and they come by the gangplank there. Okay, the old officer of deck says, I'll say, is that Bloomer? He says, don't you know what your call is? And I says, no. He said, well, by God, you better learn it. He said, if you can't remember it, sleep in the damn motor launch. And I said, okay, very good, sir. Then I get my duty. But I mean, the little things when you first go in, I tell you, everything's so much noise. And the board the ship I was on, and you know, you have flight quarters, general quarters, then you got the motor launch, and you got the captain's gig, and you got the admiral's gig, and so forth. And each one is different, bugle and fire drill and general quarters. Of course, you always know general quarters. You never forget that.
Hey, but I've got to ask you, Al, before I forget it, maybe you were coming to this anyway. They're moving you from this tanker, the Neosho, to a battleship. You didn't tell us the name of the battleship. And then to another carrier, the Saratoga, before you end up on the Enterprise. And we're going to hear about everything the Enterprise went through. But I'm sure you're aware of what went on those other ships that you almost ended up on.
Oh, yeah, well, Pearl Harbor, I really don't remember. It was in the center. I don't remember which battleship it was
on. Which battleship?
Yeah, it was in the center, more of Tennessee or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which had heavy damage there, too.
Oh, yeah, they all did.
Wasn't the Neosho the one that got blown up?
The Neosho down there in Battle of the Coral Sea, it got sunk down there. They refueled the Lexington and the Yorktown. Then it left the task force with one destroyer for protection, and the Japanese caught them by themselves there, and they sunk them both, and in the Neosho too. But anyway, that was another. That's one we missed, but that's about the only one I can remember.
Well, and good thing you weren't on the Neosho. Good thing for you. But on the Big E, so you're finally part of that ship's crew, and you told us about some of the fun things you got to do on that giant aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
What were you guys doing in the days leading up to December 7th, 1941?
Before December, we'd always go out to sea there, and then we'd qualify pilots, and then we'd come back in for a couple of days and get some liberty. Anyway, before the war, we took those Marine fighters to Wake Island, those 16 Marine fighters to Wake Island. Well, you know, Admiral Hosley was on our ship there. He put out a letter saying that we were under war conditions. He brought up all ammunition up into the guns. We were all prepared for war. The airplanes were all armed. Bombers had bombs on them and everything. They didn't put torpedoes on the torpedo planes until they actually found the enemy. However, we never did. We got within a few 100 miles or so of the Wake Island, and we launched all the 16 fighters. Well, the Marines, the pilots, were not too familiar flying at sea there with no recognition but land spots or anything, so they sent a couple SPDs with them to escort them to Wake Island. And then the SPDs, of course, wartime, we waited for them to come back. But they were stationed there when the Japanese attacked it. Then on our way back, after we were ready to go into Pearl there, before we got there, we hit a part of a storm. We hit the storm, so that would make, and we had to refuel the destroyers because Admiral Hosley, he was a captain of a destroyer, and he knew how rough it was for the sailors on him, so he made us a day late.
Well, and that would turn out to be a good thing for the Enterprise and for the Navy, that the Enterprise was late getting back to Pearl Harbor. I mean, if that storm hadn't hit.
Right, yes, otherwise we'd have been, I don't know. Might not have been here.
Well, we're thankful that he is here. And in fact, it wasn't too long ago that Al was honored by American Legion Post 147 in Clovis, California for 75 years of continuous Legion membership.
He's also been recognized for more than 75 years of scouting, and both of those are ongoing. You can tell Al's memories are still crystal clear. So what does he remember about coming into Pearl Harbor after the infamous attack? What about the Doolittle Raid and the Battle of Midway? There's much more to come with one of our last living links to the aircraft carrier that was involved in more major actions against the Japanese than any other ship in World War II, the USS Enterprise. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. And close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.